I'm reading this morning is in 1 Samuel and chapter 6. It's on page 276 in your Bibles. Remember the situation. The Philistines have won a great victory over God's people. Many of the soldiers of the Israeli army are dead. The leadership of the Israel people are dead. The Ark of the Covenant has been taken captive. Last week it was in the temple of Dagon, where they thought they could rejoice in the victory, but they were beginning to learn that God is bigger than Dagon, and the Dagon statue had fallen down and been broken at least twice. We take up the story now. When the Ark of the Lord had been in Philistine territory 7 months, the Philistines called for the priests and diviners and said, "What shall we do with the Ark of the Lord? Tell us how we should send it back to its place." They answered, "If you return the Ark of God of Israel, do not send it away empty, but by all means send a guilt offering to him. Then you will be healed and you will know why his hand has not been lifted from you." The Philistines asked, "What guilt offering should we send to him?" They replied, 5 gold tumors and 5 gold rats, according to the number of the Philistine rulers, because the same plague has struck both you and your rulers. Make models of the tumors and of the rats that are destroying the country, and pay honor to Israel's God. Perhaps he will lift his hand from you and your gods and your land. Why do you harden your hearts as Egyptians and Pharaoh did? When he treated them harshly, did they not send the Israels out so they could go on their way? Now then, get a new cart ready with 2 cows that have calved and have never been yoked. Hitch the cows to the cart, but take their calves away and pen them up. Take the Ark of the Lord and put it on the cart, and in a chest beside it put the gold object you're sending back to him as a guilt offering. Send it on its way, but keep watching it. If it goes up to it on its own to the territory, if it goes up to its own territory towards Beth Shemesh, then the Lord has brought this great disaster on us. But if it doesn't, then we will know that it was not his hand that struck us and that it happened just by chance. So they did this. They took 2 such cows and hitched them to the cart and penned up their calves. They placed the Ark of the Lord on the ark, on the cart, and along with it, the chest containing the gold rats and the models of the tumors. Then the cows went straight up towards Beth Shemesh, keeping on the road and lowing all the way. They didn't turn to the right or the left. The rulers of the Philistines followed them as far as the border of Beth Shemesh. Now, the people of Beth Shemesh were harvesting their wheat in the valley. And when they looked up and saw the ark, they rejoiced at the sight. The cart came to the field of Joshua of Beth Shemesh, and there it stopped beside a large rock. The people chopped up the wood of the ark and sacrificed the cows as a burnt offering to the Lord. The Levites took down the ark of the Lord together with the chest containing the gold objects and placed them on the large rock. On that day the people of Beth Shemesh offered burnt offerings and made sacrifices to the Lord. The 5 rulers of the Philistines saw all this and then returned that same day to Ekron. These are the gold tumours of the Philistines sent as a guilt offering to the Lord, 1 each for Ashdod, Gaza, Ashkelon, Gath and Ekron. And the number of the gold rats was according to the number of the Philistine towns belonging to the 5 rulers, the 45 towns with their country villages. The large rock in which they set the Ark of the Lord is a witness to this day in the field of Joshua of Beth Shemesh. But God struck down some of the men of Beth Shemesh, putting 70 of them to death, because they had looked into the ark. The people mourned because of the heavy blow the Lord had dealt them. And the men of Beth Shemesh asked, "Who can stand in the presence of the Lord, this holy God? To whom will the ark go up from here?" Then they sent the messengers to the people of Kiriath-Jearim, saying, "The Philistines have returned the ark of the Lord. Come down and take it up to your place." So the men of Kiriath-Jearim came and took up the ark of the Lord. They took it to Abinadab's house on the hill and consecrated Eleazar, his son, to guard the ark of the Lord. Amen, and may God bless his word to us this morning. So as I've said, God's people had endured a horrendous defeat at the hands of the Philistines. 30,000 of their soldiers were slain. Eli's two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, were killed in that battle. Eli himself died with the shock of the news, and most especially the shock of the capture of the Ark of the Covenant. This is this box covered in gold that so symbolized the presence of God, captured by the enemy. Philistines rejoiced in their victory, put the Ark in their God's temple, but then, as we saw last week, that God himself was humiliated before the presence of God in that ark. They thought they'd won, but all they'd won was one battle. The war was still going to continue. And it's the continuing of this war of a one mighty holy God against the useless dead idol gods of the enemy. That is the story of this book, and indeed is the story of the whole Bible. As we look into the consequences in chapter 6, it seems to me there are really two things that this chapter is challenging each of us about. Chapter actually divides itself very neatly in verses 1 to 12. We really have the story of the Philistines trying to deal with the ark, trying to get rid of it, and in so doing, trying to get rid of their guilt of their arrogance, the guilt of their sin, their guilt of their presumption, the guilt of them thinking that they were superior to God. And so they're dealing with their guilt. And that's the first subject that we have to tackle this morning. Because probably from time to time, we all feel guilty about sins that we commit when we discover things that we've done wrong. And that guilt hangs heavily upon us. And we have to learn how to deal with that guilt. And we can learn this morning from these Philistines some of the principles that we need to work through in order to deal with our guilt. The second half of the chapter from verse 13 is dealing with the people of God who see the ark coming back and rejoice in it and are so glad, but then seriously mess up at the end of the chapter. And they are really having to face up to the fact that it's not just a case of dealing with guilt, because they are guilty also, but they have to learn how to deal seriously with God. That you can't mess about with God. So our two themes this morning, which cover both groups of people actually, are dealing with guilt and dealing with God. So that's where we're going this morning. So the first thing this morning is we need to get real about guilt. Philistines had begun to understand that they were dealing with a really powerful, holy God. It didn't take them all that long to realize, although it did take them 7 months to get down to doing something about it. Remember at the end of last week's chapter, they took the ark and passed it on from town to town to town, trying to just get rid of it from their own lives. But each town it went, terrible plagues and consequences came. And so after 7 months, they've come to realize, look, we've really got to do something to just get rid of the thing. How can we send it back to the land of Israel. What's the right way to do that? And that's the question that they ask their leaders and their diviners. And very interesting, it's the leaders and the diviners that come up with the fact, well, look, you're guilty. You're guilty of messing with this God. You can't go on messing with God. You've got to deal with the guilt that's come into your lives because of your arrogance and because of your silliness in this whole business. But these are heathen, pagan, idol-worshipping people. Can they have anything to teach us about how to deal with guilt? We learned some lessons from them a couple of chapters ago about how to stand up for ourselves and fight and so on. And we learned some good things from these idol-worshipping heathens. Can we learn more this morning from them in this particular chapter? I think we have to understand that one of the devil's great tricks is to mix truth and half-truth into people's lives. So there are some of the things they do here this morning that are absolutely spot on. Things that we can apply to ourselves as we seek to deal with our guilt. But some of it's half-truths. It's kind of not quite right. And so we need to tread carefully as we look at the principles that they teach us and put into place for their own lives. The Bible tells us that the law of God is in everybody's heart. So even these idol-worshipping pagan unbelievers had some of the truth of God in their lives and in their hearts. So some of it is there for us to learn from. Well, what are you feeling guilty about? Can you just get your mind focused on whatever nasty things you've been doing this last week? And just face that guilt, first of all. Face that sin, because that is the first principle in dealing with guilt. The first principle is we have to face up to whatever sin it might be that there is a nagging away at our lives. We know the Philistines were beginning to face up to their sin. We know that because of what they prepared as a guilt offering. They prepared 5 gold tumours and 5 gold drafts. Now we know that God had inflicted them all with plagues, and the plagues presumably were these tumours that broke out on their skin. And they'd made the connection that probably that disease came from rats that were running about. And so they were facing up to the fact that the punishment that had come into their lives was a punishment for their sin. And so in creating these objects, they were saying, yes, we've sinned. We've done wrong in the face of God. And so they were acknowledging their sin in the very things that they prepared there. They offered no excuses. They simply prepared these things as a guilt offering to God. And that always has to be the first stage. Whenever we're feeling the need to deal with our guilt, the first thing we have to do is call our sin, sin. Call a spade a spade. Don't make excuses. Don't say it wasn't me. Don't say it was him, it was her. Don't do what Adam and Eve did, where Adam blamed the woman and the woman blamed the snake. Don't do that. They don't do that. They face up to the fact of their sin. They even produced 5 of each object. Why 5 of each object? Because there was 5 cities that the ark had gone to. They're saying this is all of our sin. From the rulers down, we've all done it. They are willing to face up to their sin. So there's the first step in dealing with guilt. You need to face up to your sin. Second step, if you want to deal with your guilt, is you need to face up to the fact that a price has to be paid. Now it's at this point the half-truths kick in. They get some of it right and some of it wrong, because that's how the devil works. He tries to mess us up, to confuse us. They get it right that a price had to be paid. Forgiveness could not just be handed out. Guilt could not just be wiped out just like that. A price has to be paid. God is a holy God, is a righteous God, is a just God. There has to be a price paid for us when we want to deal with our guilt. So they got that bit right. They got that principle absolutely right. What they didn't get right was what that price was. They thought, like countless people still think today, that if you're guilty, a wee bit money will deal with it. And so they made these gold objects. God will be pleased with a bit of gold. And so they made the gold objects. They thought that would be sufficient price to deal with their guilt. But we know that's not sufficient as a price, is it? There has to be a sacrifice. There has to be blood if there is to be forgiveness given to us. The price for all our sin is not going to be paid in gold. It has to be paid on the cross. It has to be paid in the death of the perfect Son of God in our place. That's the only place a sufficient price could be paid for our sin. It's no point in thinking when you've done something wrong, well, I'll just double my collection this week. Or I'll give a wee bit to Christian Aid. Or I'll come extra keenly to church. I'll come every Sunday instead of just now and again. I'll up it. That's not how it works. May give your conscience a minuscule peace for a wee while. But not in the eyes of God. In the eyes of God, guilt can only be wiped out when we look to Jesus. Trust in Jesus, who paid the price for us. Face up to your sin. Face up to the fact that a price has to be paid. Face up to the hardness of your heart. Now, it's very interesting that the leaders understood that this was a problem. There it is in verse 6. They say to them, why do you harden your hearts as the Egyptians and Pharaoh did when he treated them harshly? Did they not send the Israelites out so they could go on their way? There were probably still people grumbling and saying, oh, we're no paying all that gold for this. No, that's far too much. No, we'll just pass it on to somebody else like we've been doing anyway. They were still resisting. Some of them still resisting the need to seriously deal with their guilt and their sin. And these leaders have the understanding to say, no, 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 don't do that. Don't harden your heart. The only way to deal with guilt is to open your heart to God. Remember the Moses dealing with Pharaoh. And again it says, and Pharaoh hardened his heart, and Pharaoh hardened his heart, and Pharaoh hardened his heart. And then it says, and God hardened his heart. Because if you keep hardening your heart against God's way, there comes a time when God steps in and confirms that hardness of heart. Don't harden your heart. Hear the offer of forgiveness. Hear the offer of freedom from guilt that is part of the gospel, and accept it as you face up to your sin and as you face up to the fact that a price has to be paid. Don't harden your heart. Face up. The first half of this story tells us to the reality of God. The Philistines are still not absolutely sure, you see, at the end of this first section of the book. Is it God that's been doing this? Or is it just part of life? Is there really a God? Is he really a holy God? Has he really been inflicting us with these things? We need to find out. We need to set a test for us. And so that's what they do in the second half of the first section. They are seeking to have a test as to whether or not God is real or not. Now, again, the truths and the half-truths kick in. If there really is a God, and he is this holy God that we're thinking he is, we really need to think carefully how we prepare things to give to him. I think, they say, if he's really a holy God and really into hating sin and really into things being clean and new, we should maybe prepare a new cart. So they prepare a brand new cart. And they pick two cows that have never been yoked before. And they tie them up to the cart and they put the ark in that. And they tie up the cows' new wee calves in a pen. And they say, right, we'll send it off and see where it goes. But the first thing that they're doing, the first thing that is a truth in this is they understood that you don't mess around with this holy God. You treat him right. You do things clean and right and new. So that's good. That's a truth that we can learn from them. They're not going to mess about. They're not going to be hypocrites in the way they deal with this God. If he is there anyway. If he is real. So we need to guard against that. But then what they're really doing is setting up a test. You see, it's not natural for cows that have never been yoked before to go pulling a cart. It's certainly not natural for two cows that have just given birth to their wee calves to leave them behind. None of that's natural. So they've said, look, if it goes up the road, away back to Israel, we'll know there is a God. And it really is God. So they set up this fleece, what we call a fleece, don't we, from the Bible. Gideon's fleece from the book of Joshua. They set up this test to test if God is real or not. And so what happens? Of course, the cows, because they are part of the evangelism of the gospel here, sacrifice their wee calves, leave them behind, and moan and lowing all the way up the road as their hearts break at leaving their baby calves. But they go back to the people of Israel, proving to these heathen unbelievers, there is a God, and he's a holy God, and he's the one that's been dealing with us. So at least they face up to the reality of God. And that's something that is a challenge to every one of us. We must face up to the reality of our God. And he is a holy, righteous God who from time to time will punish his people and punish the nations of his people because he is a real God. Get real with guilt is the first big lesson this morning. So if there's any hovering guilt in your lives about anything that's been going on in recent days, face up to it, name it, confess it, see that in Jesus there is forgiveness, there is the way that that guilt can be wiped out. Don't put it off any longer. Don't harden your hearts. Realize you have to deal with a real, living, holy God. Get real with guilt. Now to pick up the second half of the chapter, pick up where we've left the Philistines who have begun to get real with God in some sense, we then find that God's people also have to get real with God. They're busy at their harvest, getting on with life. The ark's been gone for 7 months. Desperate business. But then they look up one day and they see the cows coming over the hill and they say, it's the ark. And they're so thrilled that the ark has come back. Now they're really very good at the beginning. They get lots of brownie points at the start of the second half of the story because they do things right. They get the Levites to come along, first of all, to take the ark down because the law of God said only the Levites could touch the ark of God. So they get the Levites to bring it down. And they think, we've got to give a thank offering to God for this. So what will we do? We'll chop up the nice new cart. They didn't keep it for themselves, which would have been a temptation to some, a brand new cart. And they killed the cows, which again would have been a temptation for them to keep two nice cows. But they chopped them up and offered them all as a burnt offering to God. So they did everything up to that point spot on, exactly right. But then they really messed up. Then I think we discover there were people who were not seriously getting real about God. They were thinking, we can tick a few boxes and then we can do what we like. And so we discover that their faith in this God wasn't very much, actually. It was a case of doing certain things, but not really engaging with God himself. And so the first thing we learn about these people, and things that we need to learn if we're going to get real with God, is we have to face up to our frivolity. Because that's exactly what happens in the case of these people. You see, they think, we've done enough. We've got the Levites. We've chopped up the cart. We've sacrificed. Now, wouldn't it be nice to have a look in the ark? Of course, that was totally forbidden. No one was allowed to look in the ark. No one was allowed to touch the ark. But they thought, we've done enough. We're okay. We can do. Let's have a look inside the ark and see if the things we've been told are supposed to be there are still there. Let's see the stone tablets. Let's see Aaron's staff. Let's see the things that were put in the ark. Let's see them for ourselves. And so they touched the ark and have the consequences delivered to them as 70 of these men are slain on the spot. But for a moment was a day of such joy and such celebration is now devastated because they thought, we can mess with God. We can do what we like with God. We don't need to be serious about all of the things God has said. We can pick and we can choose whatever we like. If you're going to get real with God, you need to face up to any of that kind of frivolity there might be in your life. That you can just tick a few boxes and then please yourself how you treat God and what you do with God. They were discovering that they had to face up to the holiness of God. For God very severely deals with these men, doesn't he? But some of them were thinking, but it was just a bit of fun. We were in high spirits. We didn't think. We were just nosy, a bit curious about the thing. Surely it wasn't a big thing. But God had said, you don't touch it. Is that not serious enough for us? If God says don't do something, isn't that enough for us? Shouldn't we just take that on board? If God says don't, we don't. They hadn't understood the extent of the holiness of God. And they come up with quite an incisive message for themselves, don't they? For there in verse 20, they say, after this happened, who can stand in the presence of the Lord, this holy God? Who can stand? What's the answer to that? Can anybody stand in the presence of a holy God? Not on our own, we can't. Not by ourselves. Because we're all sinful. We're all messed up. Who can stand in the presence of a holy God? Only, the Bible says, those who stand in Jesus. Because it's only in Jesus we can be made right. Only in Jesus we can be acceptable. Only in Jesus is there one that God can look upon and see no sin. Without Jesus, we can't stand in the presence of a holy God. They needed to face up to the reality of God's holiness. One last thing, if they were going to seriously get real with God, that they needed to face up to. They needed to face up to the reality, to the uncomfortableness of belonging to God. You see, when this happened, what's their first thought? Let's get rid of the ark. Let's pass it on. Who thought like that in chapter 5? The unbelieving Philistines, they thought like that. Let's just pass it on. You know, sometimes there's no difference between unbelievers and uncommitted Christians. No difference. And that's what we see here. They turn out exactly like the unbelievers. It's too uncomfortable dealing with God. Let's pass it on. Let's send it down to the people of Kiriath Jearim. I don't want God to be that close in my life. I don't want God to be that real in my life. I prefer to keep a distance so as I can do my own thing and please myself and just have God now and again when I need him. That's what they're saying. And so they push God away down to the people of Kiriath Jearim. How close are you willing to let God into your life? That's the question. Do you keep him away? Do you push him away? Do you keep your distance? Do you get uncomfortable with God? I think Jesus tells us, if you're going to get real with God, you're going to be uncomfortable. Because you have to be different for a start. You have to be like everybody else. You have to be distinctive. And that's uncomfortable. Being in a minority is always uncomfortable. And things will happen to you that you don't want. That's uncomfortable. And God might ask you to do things, to go places, to be something you don't want to be. And that's uncomfortable. And you have to decide, yes, I want God, however uncomfortable that might be. And only when we say yes to an uncomfortable God can we say we are dealing seriously with God. Do you remember the great quote in Lion, Witch and Wardrobe? When the four children are visiting Mr. and Mrs. Beaver, and Mr. and Mrs. Beaver say, it's time for you to meet Aslan. Aslan the lion, who is of course a picture of Jesus. They say, Wrong will be right when Aslan comes in sight. At the sound of his roar, sorrows will be no more. When he bares his teeth, winter meets its death. And when he shakes his mane, we shall have spring again. You'll understand when you see him. But shall we see him, said Susan. Why, daughter of Eve, that's what I brought you here for. I'm to lead you where you shall meet him, said Mr. Beaver. Is he a man? Asked Lucy. Aslan, a man, said Mr. Beaver sternly. Certainly not. I tell you, he's king of the wood, the son of the great emperor beyond the sea. Don't you know who is the king of beasts? Aslan is a lion, the lion, the great lion. Oh, said Susan, I thought he was a man. Is he quite safe? I shall feel rather nervous meeting a lion. That you will, dearie, and no mistake, said Mrs. Beaver. If anyone who can appear before Aslan without their knees knocking, they're either braver than most or just silly. Then he isn't safe, said Lucy. Safe? Said Mr. Beaver. Don't you hear what Mrs. Beaver tells you? Who said anything about safe? Course he isn't safe. But he's good. He's the king, I tell you. Jesus, not safe, not comfortable, but good. One we can trust. We're going to get real with God. We need to be willing to have him as close as possible in our lives. And he will keep us safe.